And welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM. This is our weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City. We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Our 2019 underwriters for Art in the Air, Valparaiso University Brower Museum, and they have several things we'll talk about in our upcoming events, and our landlord, Walt Breidinger, in this beautiful building. Hey, if you'd like to find out more about leasing space in this historic building, you can call Walt at 219-462-5821. That's 219-462-5821. We'd like to thank you for your generous support. We always like to thank Greg Kovach, WVLP station manager.
100%. Thank you, Greg.
Keeping Esther right on there, giving her the engineering lessons, so we're all on the air and doing fine. Hey, if you're interested in being a guest on our show or sending us information about your arts-related event, exhibit, or be a curator, please email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. Our program is rebroadcast on Mondays at 5 p.m. If you'd like to listen to some of our past episodes, you can go to this web address, Breck, that's BRECH.com/AOTA. That's Breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. And you can hear some of our past archive shows.
It's so wonderful you did that. I love it.
Well, I think it's important to hear some. I mean, we have some great guests coming on.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. And it's even good the second and third time you listen to
it. Hey, by the way, our WVLP listeners, you know, we're looking for support. We are a community-based radio station, and we rely on your support of both underwriters and individuals. And if you'd like to be part of that, you can go to WVLP.org/support. Encourage you to be an underwriter. We have underwriter levels all the way at different levels. We'll announce you several times during the show. We have a whole wide variety of music shows and everything, but if you're interested in doing that, go to wvlp.org/support. And you know, like I always say, don't be just a VOP listener, become a supporter, because don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. And we hope it feels good when you do that with WVLP. So now we're going to move on to our arts events. I'll start with Porter County and Valparaiso Center for the Arts, Brower Museum, and they're continuing through March 31st, three exhibits, Icons on Ammo Boxes by Sofia Altanova and Alexander Klemenko. Have you seen that yet?
I have not.
No, yet. I haven't gotten over there either. They also have Line Force and Burn Rubber by Sarah Kremp and Olivia Petridis, and The Art of Lynn Olson. And so all those will be on through March 31st at the Brower Museum. The Ellen Firm Gallery at US 12 in Beverly Shores, they will still have featuring characters by Irene Brown. Irene Brown, if you know, is a fixture on the weekends when the Depot Museum is open. But anyway, and she's a docent there, but she'll be there and all the way through February and everything. So you can go still catch her characters. The Village Gallery at Pines Village in Valparaiso still features Michael Klaus Schmidt through the end of this month. In February, and in March, on March 3rd, they'll be featuring Doris Meyer's Trees, Rocks, and Water, a collection of reflections, and I'll be there in July, by the way. Chesterton Arts Center still has their Frontline Foundations Unbroken and Alive exhibition. That's in their front gallery. These are clients of the Frontline Foundation, and part of their recovery process is healing through art, and they will also be on display. In the back gallery, they have a thing called Quilting Gone Wrong, and what it is less Leslie Caffelli has taught a fabulous fiberglass. This is not your grandma's quilt, by the way. I saw this exhibit. It's exciting. So if you get a chance, it's a whole line, fun embellishments, rule breaking. So if you want to break the rules, go to 4th Street in Chesterton and see the Chesterton Art Center. Art Barn, they will have their 2019 children's exhibit. And so if you are a member or probably a student there, they'll be running March 16th. That's a little ways off. It's through Art 27. They also have a whole wide range of classes. Go to artbarnindiana@gmail.com. That's artbarnindiana@gmail.com.
Did you know they're starting an open mic?
They are.
It's the fourth Fridays, I think.
Wow.
With Tim, who did the Canterbury open mic.
Okay.
So that's something. Art Barn is just expanding so much what they're offering.
Well, we had her as a guest on the show as executive director.
Yeah, he's a treasure.
Yes,
yeah.
It is. If you haven't been there, it's a wonderful place. Memorial Opera House. Well, they're just continuing with Shrek the Musical. They extended it through March 10th now. It's weekends, Friday, Saturday, 8 p.m., Sunday at 2 p.m. You can find out information by seeing the website or their Facebook page. Adults are 21, seniors, students, and military 18, and they do have group rates. And finally, for Porter County, Art Z, Fine Art, and Antiques. And we had those young ladies on the show also. also.
Delightful they were show. Great.
They will be doing Painting a Superhero. That's going to be with Ken Goddard. It's on Friday, February 22nd, 6 to 8 p.m. 2 hours of instruction on a large canvas, and all the painting supplies are supplied, light snacks, refreshments, and if you're over 21, they even make wine available for you. Again, you can then paint your own copy of a superhero. So that's what we have in Porter County. What do we have in LaPorte County, Esther?
It's getting busy in LaPorte County now. So we have First Friday approaching next week from 5 to 8 p.m. So Lubesnik Center for the Arts has Nature Versus Everything. The exhibit runs through June 8th, and it features 9 contemporary artists in a new environmentally minded exhibit that explores the perilous battle between humanity and the natural world. There is also a large-scale installation in the Susan Block Gallery on the second floor. It starts with an animated video of a charcoal-drawn landscape with its inhabitants and extends into 3 colorful dimensions so that the viewer becomes part of the art. Southern Shore Art Association, their February exhibit, A Moment in Time, continues through the 24th. The March exhibit, Old, New, and Renewed, opens the first Friday, March 1st. The gallery is located at 724 Franklin Street, and it is open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 12 to 5 p.m. You can visit them on the web, southernshoreartassociation.com, or visit their Facebook page, Southern Shore Art Association. You have pieces in
I have 6 pieces in there, and I will be there. As soon as I'm done with the show, I'll be jumping in my little car, driving to Michigan City, and I'll be gallery hosting until 5 o'clock today.
I know. I will be visiting today. SFC Gallery will host an Artist Appreciation Night on Friday, March 15th at 5 to 8 p.m. Thaddeus C. Gallery is located in downtown LaPorte, and their hours are 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Tuesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. They can be reached at 219-326-8626 or thaddeusc.com on the web. Blink Contemporary Art at 1709 Franklin Street. That's the gallery of Rick Lang and Suzanne Cohen Lang. Rising Phoenix Gallery, 2803 South Franklin Street. They will be opening an exhibit March 1st called Threads of Life, and it runs through the 31st of March. So I know Laurel Izard will have a piece there and a lot of local fiber artists. It'll be a really good show. Nest, located at 803 Franklin Street. For First Friday, we're going to have a few new artists in the gallery, and I'll talk more about them next week. And it'll also be maybe a let's make a deal. I'm willing to part with some art, some displays, some furniture. So that'll be
such
interesting.
A deal. Esther for a good deal.
Singing Sands Toastmasters is now an officially chartered Toastmasters group, and they meet every first and third week of the month. So the March dates are the 4th and the 18th. Friday, March 8th, something special is happening. The Michigan City Commission for Women, we're celebrating International Women's Day in the Nest with the theme of positive visibility of women celebrating their achievements. And this gathering includes a women's art exhibit, musical performances, comedy, interactive art, some educational activities, international foods, and it's all ages. Come and visit us from 4 to 8 p.m. Sunday, March 17th is the monthly meeting of the Mindful Fiber Artists. Please join in. It's an open group. We just come if you have a project you want to work on, if you just want to talk, we would love to see you. March 23rd is the Every Kind of Talent Show with Captain Ambivalent.
Ta-da.
Yay! It's open mic meets vaudeville meets show and tell. And we're looking, always looking. We have a nice healthy sign up for March already, but more are always appreciated. We're looking for magicians, dancers, filmmakers, actors, comedians, poets, storytellers, visual artists, animal trainers. You know,
whatever
yes,
it takes,
well,
right?
Maybe qualified.
Even poets, right?
And musicians, especially. Yes, we love poets. Carol Estes comes and does some great poetry. And that's it for LaPorte.
You know, you got a lot
County.
Happening at the Nest. You know, so if you get out there, it's just south of 8th Street there. So you sometimes get out of the loop there from the traffic.
Yeah, we're kind of in that. There's a cloak of invisibility over our block.
Maybe
and
you
we're
put
trying
Captain
to,
Ambivalent out in the corner there to get people coming
I
in.
I think you've got something there. That those gold boots will shine for blocks.
Well, now we'll move on to Lake County. And South Shore Arts have spring classes sign up starting for March 25th. And they have enrollment. However, they just added a figure drawing class with Tom Torlinki, and that's Mondays 6 to 8:30. So if you're interested in doing that, they just added that course, and so you can sign up again starting for March 25th, but enrollment is right now. Bachman Gallery, they have Haunts. I mean, this was a beautiful curated exhibit by John Kane, the executive director for Southern Shore Arts, and it features the guerrilla photographers. And I haven't quite done guerrilla photography, but they go into old buildings and Gary and all.
Yeah, but
over.
Now in Gary, you can do that for a fee. I think you pay a fee to the city of Gary, and you no longer have to worry about getting cited by the yes.
Well, anyway, there's a whole wide range of architectural ruins on the verge of being repurposed as architectural gardens now and other public spaces. In the Atrium Gallery, James Wachowiak will be there through March 24th, and they will all have an artist reception at the gallery for both the Haunts exhibit and his exhibit in the Atrium on March 3rd from 1 to 3 p.m. That's a Sunday. And then Toll Theater was going to have oil artists through March 17th, Laurie Schirmer Carpenter, doing her Midwest receptions, and she will have an artist reception on this coming first Friday, so you can come see her there. Cafe Fresco in Crown Point, which is part of the South Shore Arts, I think, has Brianna Mihaljevic doing The Region at a Glimpse, and she'll be running through February through April 28th. Artful Gardens, which is part of the South Shore Arts in Crown Point also. I'm going to have trouble with this one. Cassina Sanuski, there we go, Beyond the White Gardens, and she'll be there through April 24th, and she has a reception on March 30th. Studio 659 continues to have Artistic License, their annual juried show, through March 4th. I have a couple pieces in that one, by the way. And you can find them on 119th Street in Whiting. And they're open Thursday, Friday, from 12 to 7, and Saturday, 10 to 2. And you can find out information about them at studio659.org. Miller Arts and Creative District, Indie Windy, a love story. Did you have a question?
No, I have no question. I'm just listening.
Indie Windy, a love story, which was at the Bachman Gallery at Southern Shore in Munster, and now is at the Miller Arts and Creative Art District, and they've actually spread the exhibit out. So it'll be at their main exhibit, and then they've split some of it up at the Gary Public Library, which is on 5th Street, and then also the Social Kitchen, which is also on 5th Street. You can always find out information about that. That exhibit was a real hit at the South Shore Bachman Gallery. MillerArts.org, or you can go and find them on Facebook. You can always call Meg Roman and find out about what she's got going on. Her information, both email and phone, is there. Nostalgic Structures and Scenes exhibit, the works of some guy I know, Larry Breckner. It will continue through March 8th at the 8585 Broadway Professional Building. That's the former Chase Bank building there in Merrillville. So you can go see there. There is no reception for that, but you can just cruise on through there. And if you like buying something, let us know. Area Artists Association presents Artistic Narrative, and that's the Indiana Visitor Center. That's going to be running through April 24th. That's at I-80 and I-94, if you're not familiar, exit 3 on Kennedy Avenue. There are about 60-some pieces from 15 artists from the Area Artists Association. The building is open 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily, even including weekends, and there'll be a reception on February 28th from 5 to 7 p.m., so you can see that. And finally, in Lake County, South Lake Artist Cooperatives, or fondly known as SLAC, they have Indifference and Ecstasy, two sides of the same coin. They'll be at the Wild Rose Brewery in Griffith. By the way, AAA member Dorothy Graydon, who we've had on this show, she has three paintings in that, and that show goes through April 20th. So that's what we have.
It's really getting much busier as March is approaching.
We had some pretty slim things going on in some of those months. By the way, if you'd like to get your information on the air, we'd love to have it. It's artontheair@gmail.com. So artontheair@gmail.com. Be happy to have that if you're interested in being a guest on our show and everything. We think it's wonderful to have you. Well, we're excited about our guests today.
We are.
They are the authors of a great book I have. It's Saving a Century of Progress. And if you don't know what that is, that's these beautiful homes that are out in Beverly Shore, but they're part of the National we used to say Lakeshore, but now it's our Indiana Dunes National Park as of the 15th of February. So the 61st National Park. So we're all excited about that. But I'd like to introduce our guests, Teresa Badovich and Robin Carlasio. I also know her as Robin Beeson from going to high school, so we were way, way back. So welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, we love it. Well, first of all, we'll start with you, Teresa. We'd like to just find out a little about your background, where you're from, how you're here, and everything like that. So,
I'm born and raised in the region, so I'm from Crown Point. I live there now. And my background has always been in newspapers, do design and graphic artist, redesign many newspapers. I had the pleasure of working here at the Times for two tours of duty, as we say. And in between was at the Detroit News and the Chicago Tribune, and have now taken all that with the marketing experience and, you know, started our own business. So.
Okay. Like, where did you go to school? You went to Crown Point?
Went to Crown Point, went to Purdue. I was a Purdue grad. It was one of those things cool. Where I actually went for medical technology, and so I did math, chemistry, and biology for 2.5 years and decided I was going to go ahead and pick up a copy editing job at the school paper because I was just doing too much math and chemistry. I needed something, you know, to my creative side. And so sure enough, I went down to the Exponent and applied, got the job, and all of a sudden went, oh my goodness. Light bulb went off and said, this is what I want to do the rest of my life. And eventually became the editor-in-chief of the school paper down there and loved it and, you know, went on to the Journal and Courier and all those good things.
Fantastic. So. You must know Sharon Ross then.
Very well.
Well,
very
Sharon, Sharon and I go way back to my days on the department when she would do the rounds and I was working the desk and would give the daily news. So yeah,
excellent. Yeah. Well, yeah, shout out to Sharon, she's awesome,
she's great. So well, Robin, we have a history together, so but you need to tell our audience about yourself.
Well, I was born and raised in Highland. My grandpa actually had a farm there, and it's a family compound kind of thing. My dad's 7 brothers and sisters. Everybody had houses close together, so I thought everybody grew up like that. Fast forward, Larry, high school, and I knew I was going to college, but I wasn't one of those blessed people who had a focus and knew exactly what I was going to do. I had my counselor in college every week. She knew I'd be there, like changing my major once again. And then, like I like to say, journalism found me. I kept getting offered writing jobs, and I thought, wow, I didn't think I could make a living at it, but I love to do it. And I was standing outside. I mean, I will never forget this. I was standing outside the library at Purdue and just looked heavenward. And it was like after like my third job in like 2 weeks where I'd been offered these writing jobs from really great places. And I said, you know, you could have made it a lot easier. I was looking at God and saying, you know, I really spent a lot of time doing things that I'm never going to use. But anyway, and then I knew. And that was that. And I interned at CBS, but I knew I wanted to do print and ended up working at the Times, where Teresa and I met. Otherwise, I would have never met her, and loved it. It was the golden age of journalism, especially we got to do things. They sent me all over the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, to travel and to do not travel reporting. It was about real meaty issues, you know, and humanitarian aid and developing in the developing world. And just so blessed. And things change. Newspapers changed. And it was time to move on. So that's what we did. So that's me in a nutshell.
Where did you go to school?
Purdue.
Purdue. So you're both Purdue girls. I'm a Purdue guy. My master's and bachelor's from that. I kind of had the same experience, too, real quickly. I was going into electrical engineering.
Oh, my goodness.
And sat in integrated calculus and analytic geometry. And I said, oh, my gosh, I don't know if I want to do this kind of stuff. And I'd always been involved in media and theater and things like that. And I was just on the edge of starting a recording studio. So I changed mine, too. So I know how that is.
Exactly.
Well, we're at 20 minutes after. This is WVLP, and we'd like to thank our underwriters once again, Walt Breidinger and Valparaiso University's Brower Museum for supporting Art on the Air. Again, if you'd like to be a guest, artontheair@wvlp@gmail.com. Love to have you on. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about how you got to collaborate on this wonderful book.
Well, it was really serendipity, quite honestly. We were asked to become board members for the Dunes National Park Association, quite a few years now, and just for our love for the dunes, it was a perfect fit. And we bring our expertise to the table. All the board members bring their expertise to the table. And of course, ours is marketing and creativity. So we bring all that to the table. Once we were exposed to all the things that the dunes had to offer, that's when we learned about the Century of Progress homes. And we're just blown away. There's a tour, an annual tour, where people can actually go inside the homes and see all the work that's been done. And the first tour that we were in, and chime in here, Robin, it was amazing.
Well, and people came back and they wanted to know more. The docents do a fabulous job. They are so schooled. They know these homes. But they wanted more. And they wanted to know, like, how did this even come to be? And we thought, well, we needed to give them more. And what we found, it even astonished us. Those homes, that they are still there, and the way that, in the shape that they're in, they're living museums, basically.
That's true.
And they weren't. I mean, they came, they brought them in 1934 across the lake.
How fantastical is that?
I know, and just put them on the beach and said, go
ahead. Well, let's talk about, like, a little bit, like, even before they came there, where they were, because I don't know if everyone knows where they were.
In 1933, Chicago hosted the Century of Progress. It was like a World's Fair. And these homes were part of thousands of individual buildings. And this was all about the changes in architecture and the changes in building materials. And there were just literally thousands of structures down by the Museum of Science and Industry. Mm-hmm. And what happened was, is that most of these, they were built as billboards you could go into, but I mean, they weren't meant to last technically. I mean, so many of them were torn apart, I mean, and just dumped at the end of the tour. But a gentleman by the name of Bartlett had this vision that he was going to develop Beverly Shores as, I mean, he created Beverly Shores and wanted this, and it was serendipity. I mean, all the different things that happened that made it so that he met the guy that did this, that was working the South Shore. I mean, he owned the South Shore. And so all these different things, but these houses came, and he decided that they would be his promotion.
Right, his marketing tool.
Well, and you know, the dunes themselves, I mean, it's been way more than 100 years that people came to study botany, and it's such a unique environment. Yeah. So there's so many things to say about this, but that was like the most, and people lived in those homes without foundations or anything like that. And then there was a decision made in the 1990s that they should save these. These are the last living structures from the 1933-34 World's Fair.
And the World's Fair, I guess, kind of, you know, what used to be Meigs Field, I'm a pilot, so I used to call it still that, but Northerly Island, it covered that and the entire coast for the World Fair. You have a great graphic in your book that shows that. So,
right. I can't even imagine anything on that scale now doing something that.
No, yeah. I think that we have opposition to that, like what happened with Amazon in New York even. So, but so anyway, how do they arrive on the shore?
So they actually barged them across the lake. And can you even imagine that? And you know how we get the ice shelves now in the winter? This was going on when they had...
They did it in February.
Oh, my gosh.
Of 1934. I was crazy.
So you know there's an ice shelf. They finally get the barges over to this side of the lake. And then you have the obstacle of the dune.
Oh, yeah.
You have to bring them up. They had to take tree trunks to kind of roll them up the dune and get them where they could at least, where people wouldn't be listing when they were living in them.
And then they settled upon Lakefront Drive, which we have in Beverly Shores,
right.
That's where they are now.
And so then they kind of tell us, like, they've been sitting there for quite a few years, and then what happened with them?
Well, in the 1990s, their Indiana Landmarks and the park came together and created a program to save these homes. The Park Service would never be able to spend the kind of money that it would take. So what they asked people who were interested to come in, have a long-term lease, but put all their own money into restoring these homes, and they have to be historical. So it wasn't like you couldn't just slap a Pella window in there. You had to do it with the historically they were historic.
Right.
And they built foundations for these homes, and so that's an additional expense. And the foundations, like in their basements, that's where the leasees got to have some freedom.
Right.
Because those weren't they're not structurally significant. So they were able to do that. But then these homes and what they have done and their stories are incredible. We were so blessed to be able, they agreed to let us come in and give us access to talk to them and interview them and have a photographer take pictures for the book. And
the way this works, I mean, as Robin said, they started talking about this in the 1990s. So it ended up early 2000s is when they actually formed the agreement. So these properties exist in the national park, and the Indiana Landmarks leases the buildings from the park, and then they in return do sublease them to the lessees, who in exchange fix them up. So can you imagine having a 50-year lease?
Well, Esther and I think before the show we're talking about, boy, you'd fall in love with your house, and then all of a sudden you're gone.
Yeah. Because 50 years goes by pretty fast.
It does, quickly. But there's, you know, always an opportunity to continue to negotiate. You know,
right.
They're always looking for folks. In each lessee brought something to the table. They had some expertise. So, you know, is the average person going to be able to do that? For example,
the Beatty's
for the Florida Tropical House. There's a beautiful iron staircase railing that goes in there, and part of it needed to be replaced. So who perfect than Beatty Machine in Hammond to fabricate the part that was missing? So now it's whole.
And that's the wonderful part. I know a lot of the materials are not, you can't find the historical materials, but you do have to come as, you know, it needs to be as close as, I mean, it needs to be historical, even though it's not the original material.
Well, and on the one that's next to the Florida Tropical, the raw stone, mm-hmm. they actually had to find a new material that would mimic the old material, because raw stone, it was a factory in Lafayette, and it failed. They had to keep making new iterations of that material. And
which only had like not even a 20-year lifespan. Yeah.
Exactly.
And especially with the harsh winters up here, you have to think about how the houses are faring against the weather on the shore. So there's that added extra element. So, yeah, the raw stone was replaced with permastone, and it's absolutely beautiful right now. It's amazing. Ross Gambrill is the lessee for that particular home. And he's done a fascinating job. He's restored all the original floors, put all those pieces back in piece by piece. Again, inside, beautiful. And as Robin mentioned earlier, they took a little creative license, for example, on that lower level. They're allowed to do that. And in Ross's in particular, there's a home theater in there and a nice kitchen and, you know, walks out to a great outdoor kitchen, that type of things. But
I'll be glad to see when the dumpster leaves finally, when he's actually done.
Exactly. We're waiting for that too. Well, and at the Cypress Log Cabin, they actually took advantage of the hurricane because they needed new cypress timbers to replace the ones that the raccoons had feasted on for a while. And so what they were able to do is they were able to, you know, log them over and put them back in. Okay. And it's, every story is fascinating. They're just the nicest, kindest, love where they are kind of people. It's like they're on vacation. And I think that people here may not realize, because they drive past them, they've become used to seeing them. People come from all over to see these homes. There's 3 million unique visitors at the national park each year. And a lot of those people come, and they definitely want to see. And if you stay spending time out there, you'll see people just driving by, because they want to see these homes. You know, at Beverly Shores did have many other structures that came from the World's Fair, but they burned. It was the Colonial Village.
I know. Right.
And then there was another small section of 5 homes, and those burned too. They had a big bog fire in World War II. So anyway,
and people
more
come
than
for
you might want to know,
the depot too. There's like so many train enthusiasts who come through It's for the
so
depot,
beautiful.
It is. So
and to
beautiful.
Have it as a working structure where you literally get on the South Shore there and enjoy the museum when it's open, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, in fact, they have their 5x5 exhibit coming up. And so, and by the way, we're on WVLP, Art on the Air. And again, if you'd like to be on the air, artontheair, WVLP@gmail.com. And send us your art information, everything. Again, we want to thank Walt Breidinger and, of course, our Brouwer Museum for supporting the show. So, can you go, why don't we've talked a little about those. Why don't we go through each of the homes there? There's five of them there that are part of the Century of Progress. And then there's some down the road that you might repair. So.
Exactly.
The favorite's probably the Florida Tropical House, because I know I photographed that multiple times.
It is one of the most photographed homes in the world.
Yeah.
And you would think it would be like the Biltmore Mansion. And that gets a lot of press, too. But people, I mean, it's a gorgeous home, and it just stands out. It's just spectacular.
It is the most recognized.
My quick story on that is one of my photographs was in an exhibit, and one of the men who worked on the renovation purchased it and gave it to the Beatty family. So,
nice.
So my photo is
nice.
Hanging probably somewhere in here. I think he lives in Munster, and he called me and thanked me for the wonderful photograph. So,
how nice.
That's very nice. That's very nice.
Well, and your photographs of that home are spectacular.
Well, thank you. Well, I've discovered the correct angle to shoot that home from. There's really just shooting it slightly on the western angle and everything, and if you catch the light about mid-afternoon, not where there's some shadow and everything, that's the best way, because I've shot it in wintertime and everything, and I've tried other angles, and I look at them, I'm like, they don't, but yet that's something about the lines in that house from that angle just jump out, similar to the one that you have on the cover of your book.
I was
actually
just going to say that, exactly. It's a beautiful angle to get it at. And of course, that one is, that and the Rawstone are actually on the beach side. The other three homes are up on the dune across from the street, but all on Lakefront Drive there.
Yeah, there used to be a whole, in fact, the depot had an exhibit that showed all the homes that used to be on the beach side, and of course the National Lakeshore National Park no longer allows any building on that side. So,
right. Well, and there were problems with, you know, the Red Lantern when that fell into the lake, and changing in currents and that kind of thing. But yes, in this particular enclave, there are five historic homes. The Florida Tropical, which we've talked about, the Cypress Log Cabin, the Armco Faro, which is between the Cypress Log Cabin and then it would be the House of Tomorrow, which isn't done yet. That's the one that we would really like to help like promote a little bit, because they're looking, Indiana Landmarks is looking for a person to invest and be part of the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. The House of Tomorrow was the one that had the airplane hangar. It was all glass, and it was fine in the winter because it was insulated, but summertime it was like an oven. So they've got some new things that they'll allow them to do that are not historic, but they'll work better. And then you've got the Rawstone and the Florida Tropical. Those are the five. And then we'll pick up on the homes that we're going to do as beach rentals. They're historic homes that we are working to rehabilitate so that people would actually be able to come out and spend a week or a weekend at the lake.
Oh, that'd be great. Now, the leases I've heard variably is 50 or 30 years. Which is it?
It's 50-year
lease. It is 50-year lease.
And same thing with, you know, the House of Tomorrow. What a great opportunity. Now, you have to have a few cool million to be able to restore it. However, it is for a long-term 50-year lease, which is really fantastic.
And they can't sublease it to anyone else. Nope. That's my understanding.
Correct. And this is, I mean, talk about modern. When you're talking about all these Century of Progress homes, they were each representing or promoting a new material, construction material of the future. So here in the House of Tomorrow, you had floor-to-ceiling glass. And so you have 360-degree view of everything, which is really cool. But one of the most unique features, and is still futuristic, is the garage was actually an airplane hangar. And that was what they thought the House of Tomorrow, you know, was going to be.
We'd all have our own airplanes now.
Absolutely. We'd
they
just
thought
be,
for sure
you know,
we would.
Open the garage and, you know, boom,
George
right
Jetson
in.
Out.
Exactly.
Well, and one of the pieces, though, from the House of Tomorrow that will be waiting for whoever is the lucky leasee is an aquarium that they found in Wisconsin, that just came up, that somebody saw it and found it. And then Todd Zeiger, who is the local guy from Indiana Landmarks, went up and said, sure enough. So he's got the
actual aquarium that was in there. So good thing somebody realized it was architecturally significant and didn't get rid of it. So it was just in storage all that time.
And the architect was from that area. And so that's probably how it found its way.
Exactly. This was designed by noted Chicago architect George Keck. And during the House of Tomorrow, it was so, during this, the World's Fair, it was so popular that people actually had to pay an extra 10 cents just to take a tour.
Because the other ones did cost like 10 cents each.
Wow.
And there were Purdue students that lived in the Ross, wasn't it the Rostrum? That they, because they needed a place to stay while they were there, because, you know, Chicago would have been quite expensive for the students who took the 10 cents.
Of course,
cents.
Now Beverly Shores is pretty expensive to live in, too, so.
Yeah.
I guess barging those homes over actually accomplished what he wanted, the development of an entire community on the lake.
Originally,
eventually, he had plans for a hotel and a casino. It's actually, if you look at some of the older renderings from his vision, it's quite garish looking. So good thing that.
That didn't happen.
Exactly. But, you know, it is a shame that the other homes were lost. But it's taking a cue from the Century of Progress homes and their leasing program that was the inspiration for what we, the Dunes National Park Association, want to do next. Along the same front drive, Lakefront Drive in Beverly Shores, is the Meyer House. And that one is right across from Kimmel Beach. It's beautiful up on the dune.
Beautiful.
That's one of the structures that we're looking to rehabilitate first. Then there, obviously, they're the Solomon Enclave, which is at the complete opposite end. And there will be 6 units. So if you had, for example, you want to get together with family reunion, everybody could have their own units, which is really quite lovely.
They need to be used.
Well, and the goal on this is that not all of us have $3 million to put into a house. But, you know, for $1,000, $2,000 for a week, you get to stay and you get to have that experience in this historic home without it breaking the bank.
And helping the dunes out.
Yes, there's no place here in this national park where you can stay in the national park itself. So this will be the first place that you'll be able to do that.
That's tremendous. So you can see the development of those homes. Now, yeah, again, these new homes, well, first of all, do you have membership in the association to, like, contributions that people
would
like?
We do. We actually have a capital fund drive specifically for this. So if you want to reserve a spot for one of the rentals, you can donate to our capital fund drive. We also very much encourage folks to become a member. We obviously have several different levels and thank you gifts on that. But there's so many people that are passionate about the dunes. Mm-hmm. So please join our cause.
So where's the website or contact information if they'd like to join?
DunesNationalPark.org. If you go on our website, the slider on the top right now leads you to the Capital Fund Drive, so you can look at the different levels. Membership is also there. These books that we're talking about, Saving a Century of Progress, are available on the website, as well as we commissioned Mitch Markovitz to do a beautiful South Shore poster for us.
Okay.
So there's those as well. And our friends at the Depot, by the way, also carry the books and the posters, as well as the Eastern National Gift Shop over at the Dunes Tourism Center.
Yeah, it used to be on Amazon. I was looking that up before the show and said,
yeah, it was on Amazon.
But how many copies of the book did you print?
Oh my goodness. There's several thousand.
Okay.
Was printed, you know, and some of these are given as gifts. And others are, you just sold directly.
And it's surprising because the book's been out a couple of years, but people still, I mean, we get some like every week, you know, we're selling some more books or people become members and get, you know, a complimentary copy.
It's an extremely attractive and usable book. I mean, it's just, each page is so interesting, filled with a fact or a timeline, and it's just about all
color photography in it, you know, from cover to cover, except some of the archival photos that are in there. And yeah, it's a beautifully done book.
It's a beautiful book.
60 some pages. I counted through it when I was going through it, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. And it is a paperback, but it's what they call it folio size, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really nice, it would make a nice coffee table book. So if you want to put it out.
Well, and Teresa and I wanted to do something where the proceeds would go to the Dunes National Park Association for the restoration of these next group of homes. And it was really a labor of love.
It truly was.
It was so chaotic towards deadline, but yes, it was. It was great fun.
All proceeds do benefit the Dunes National Park. We are the Friends group that raises money for park programs and projects like the one that we're working on with restoring the homes.
Now, what's your relationship with like the Save the Dunes also? Is there a...
There are many Friends groups, and each has like a different goal. Some are more environmental, or more lobbying and advocacy. So,
and then you got the Dunes Learning Center, and you know, obviously there's
great programs
aimed at
there,
school-age children, and education.
And we had Eve on from Dig the Dunes, and we mostly about using the dunes and activities in and around it. So. Yeah, it's great. Well, now you've done the book, and you can get it at those locations that you talk about. But you also do something else. Your real life business is the Idea Factory in Crown Point. So tell us a little bit how that came to be and what you do.
It's a great name.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
Yeah, we started back 10 years ago already. We've been blessed with 10 years of great success. Both Robin and I, again, were working at the Times. Our experience, it was just when we were working together, we just had this type of experience that we knew would mesh well. And there was a need out there for marketing. At the time, there were a lot of companies that were getting rid of their marketing departments. And we literally, people were coming to us asking us to do some work for them before we had even started the business. And we're like,
we have maybe something
we
here.
Can, you know, do this. It's been, a blink of an eye. It has been a whirlwind.
It has gone really fast. And we just decided over lunch. I mean, seriously, I didn't really know Therese very well. We worked in the same place, but she tended to work nights. And I was a reporter, so I was out of the office more than I was in it. But she had worked on this great project that I did when I was in Russia. And she was the architect behind how it looked. And it was beautiful. We won awards. It was wonderful. But, we just got together and just decided it was time to go in a new direction. And so that's what we did.
So we do everything from, obviously, we have a wide skill set. We do newsletters for several communities. For example, we do the Highland Gazebo Express.
We still get that. Even though we live in Chesterton, we have homes in Highland. So.
Oh, there you go. Well, fantastic. We just brought on the schools a year ago, so we do the school town as well. We do East Chicago Life, which is their city newsletter, North Township, you name it. So we have a publishing side of the business. In addition to this book, we did a book for Franciscan Alliance, and it was actually for St. James because it was their centennial, and that was a beautiful opportunity. So, but on the other side, we also do a lot of marketing consultation. So whether it's building a large campaign, media buys, we build websites, brand, logo identity,
The Town of Highland website?
Yes,
it's
we
very
do.
Easy to use. Yeah. I was on it the other day checking out what you did and everything.
Thank you. We enjoy it. We wanted it to be a little bit more playful as a government website instead of just being so rigid.
I know, it made me smile as I was.
And we wanted it not to be static either, so the homepage changes all the time. Because otherwise it just gets old and stale, Yeah.
Our motto is we don't do ho-hum.
I like that. Don't do the Idea Factory does not do ho-hum.
We don't. And that has really catapulted us because, there were certain things like when we started and it was like we would go and learn what we didn't already know, and it was just, it's been a lot. It's been a lot of fun. Like every day is different. And the other thing about having our own business is that we've been able to do things like volunteer with the Dunes National Park Association. And we created the concept for the Patriot Brunch in Crown Point. And, we work on that as volunteers as well.
Fantastic. Yeah.
It's nice when you can let your playful side out.
Exactly. Teresa just handed me a thing called Trojan Today, which is, I've seen the old School Town newsletters from School Town of Highland, and it's like, you're right, those were ho-hum. It's, you can tell that they were produced in-house, and these are definitely much more vibrant, a lot of color, easy to navigate. It's something that if you get, you don't just kind of put it in the recycling bin, so...
We are blessed with people who like to read what we do, which is fantastic. The other thing is, it's like we get the benefit of finding, like, talking to these, like, creative, amazing kids at the schools and artists in Highland. And just, there's just a story everywhere you look.
Well, we're on WVLP, Art on the Air, and we're having
these
a wonderful,
so interesting.
Wonderful conversation. Again, Walt Breitinger is our along with Brouwer Museum, is our sponsor and our underwriter. So if you're interested in that, again, Art on the Air, WVLP@gmail.com, if you're interested in being on the air or doing something with our show or sending us information. So,
yes, and if you have a friend who is not... won't write in and let us know what they're doing, please do it for them so that we know what's going on. There's, yeah.
For our opening art segment. Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Well, it is getting fuller. So now we're doing a whole 10 minutes here.
That's good. We'll do 15. Well, you know, yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah, and we're hoping, and you can as hear the archive of any of our shows, usually within a week at Breck, that's BRECH.com/ Art on the Air, AOTA, Art on the Air, AOTA, and you can listen to the show. So Idea Factory, where are you located at?
We are located in Crown Point, and we're actually, again, blessed to be inside the historic courthouse on the square.
Wow.
So our office is on the second level. For those of you that have visited the building, the first floor are the retail shops.
Sure.
And then on the second floor, there's the beautiful Mackey Ballroom,
right,
where there's events, and we're on that level. We're in the West Wing.
Okay, and do you have Edda Taylor sitting in the same building with you?
Edda is a lovely, lovely person. And actually, we've created this synergy with our building colleagues, as we call them. Edda's on the third floor. So, for example, one of our clients needs to do a photo shoot for a campaign. We collaborate with Edda, and we're able to take them upstairs, do a whole shoot, spend a half day. We have another local colleague, the Ad Garden. They're also on our floor, and they do videos and commercials, and are fabulous to work with too. So it's really kind of nice that we all have our expertise in the building.
Great synergy, great location to be too.
It really, really is. There's just a lot of vitality in Crown Point, and the shop owners are all nice, and you know, we get out, we visit. It's fun. It's nice. It's a nice place to walk to because we try to walk at lunch.
Yes,
that's the best part of a small town.
And there's lots of food places right around the square there.
Exactly.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
There's a boom going on right now with downtown, with new restaurants coming in. But our tenant, you know, since we have office space in the building, one of the things that's so unique is, again, this is a historic structure. A lot of people don't realize that that's tax dollars do not support that building.
Right.
So they also have a foundation that helps support the building, and we have had the pleasure of working on the Patriot Brunch Committee and their capital fund drive. So we've kind of been involved, dappled in a few extracurricular volunteer activities, but yeah.
Giving back is an important part of what we do.
Absolutely.
Very good. Now, do you have clients, you know, mostly it seems like Lake County. Do you have clients that kind of range outside of Lake County? And
we do. It varies on who and what is, you know, going on in the area.
And if they want to get in touch with you, how do they do that? Your website.
They can visit us on our website or shoot us an email at Teresa, Theresa.
Or Robin, R-O-B-I-N.
At The Idea Factory. .us.com. You can also connect us through our website, which is theideafactory.us.com.
And you have a Facebook presence, I assume.
Yes, and or just call us directly.
Okay.
Our office phone is area code 219-779-9041.
Give it to us one more time, because it's radio and you may not be able to write it down.
219-779-9041.
So what do you guys see for the future of the Idea Factory? But do you have any plans for like another book?
You know, that was actually something we talked about from the very beginning.
Yes.
That we truly wanted to, because we knew that, you know, the raw stone wasn't complete yet, and obviously the House of Tomorrow. So there, the future's bright.
But there are some other publishing opportunities too, whether that is a magazine, which is we've been talking about. And, oh yeah,
that would be so great
and fun. Yeah, and you know, but yes,
and current all the time,
and add some books to the repertoire too.
So are you involved in this logs, glass, metal, a century of architectural legacy at all? All these things going on around the houses? I just found that it's May 3rd at 6:30.
The Logs for Lustrons tour, yes. Oh, we partner with Indiana Landmarks, mm-hmm. and our group, you know, volunteers with the tours and vice versa.
We become docents.
Yes.
Which is also so much fun.
Yeah, because Robin and I last time, you know, typically the staging area is always at the Dunes Visitor Center, and they always have shuttles to the homes, whether it's Logs to Lustrons or the Century of Progress tour.
Because parking is a nightmare out there for buses.
Right.
It's just, I mean, the buses make it so that there's not so many cars, there's not enough places to park.
So typically, one's at the Visitor Center where we have a booth, and people are welcome to stop by and say hello. Mm-hmm. Become a member, buy a book, and the other gets to be at one of the houses. And last year we did the Meyer House, mm-hmm. which was fabulous. Weather was fantastic, and then we switched, so we did a half day at each, so we could each enjoy
and
that.
May is a great time, and then the Century of Progress tour is in September, mm-hmm. the end of September.
The date hasn't been announced yet, but tickets typically go on sale for at the beginning of August. And just so you know, there are a limited number of seats, so it's a little more than
and they sell out fast.
10 minutes,
yeah. You know, sometimes yeah, it's so
it's
you
crazy.
Really need to know when they go on sale at 8 a.m. you need to hop on. We always put that information up on our website, so again you can visit dunesnationalpark.org, and we'll keep you posted on when tickets go on sale.
When we started looking on the back end to see like how fast when we were first doing the tour, and we're walking on the back end with the website, and it was just like every time you updated it, it'd be like 80 more people, 76 more people, and then before you knew it, it was just sold out. Yeah,
it's rare if there's tickets after the first day.
Do you think the park and or they would expand, like do a second?
There's been discussion of that, but you also need to keep in mind that these leasees, these are their
right.
personal homes, so it's quite a commitment, and it takes quite some time. There's a lot of preparation
sure.
that goes into the home. So,
but if you did it like on the same weekend, for example,
exactly,
that you know it wouldn't be quite as you know you only have
right.
to do one cleaning.
Well, and we buy special floor coverings,
right.
so that all has to be put down, and there's quite a bit, and you know the park staff. You can't
They're amazing.
They
do all the heavy lifting,
yeah.
And
honestly.
We have done this in heavy rains, like torrential rains, and they're still out there doing it. You know, they
directing
just cannot
traffic.
Be thanked enough
yeah.
for everything they do.
Absolutely.
Well, and the dunes is actually a very unique feature. Unfortunately, and of course, saving the dunes became Paul Douglas actually was a major part of that, but, you know, we lost a lot of the dunes, too. I mean, the Hoosier Slide in Michigan City and... Of course, now that NIPSCO is phasing out that plant in 10 years, and they're working with Michigan City and the people about how to develop that mm-hmm. for part of the National Lakeshore.
That is going to be an incredible asset, you know, when you think about where it is and everything. Yeah, I mean, Ball Glass used to take down the dunes to make jars. I mean,
and we just think of that now, and you just think, oh my goodness, right?
Well, even like in Highland, Ridge Road, and you and I lived in Highland,
right.
you could see where they mined sand, and it's like really flat, and then all of a sudden it becomes a ridge again.
Yep.
And I remember as a kid watching them do sand mining, even into like the Black Oak area, in the unincorporated area, they were taking the sand
they
out
did.
There.
I mean, we had beautiful sand in Highland.
Hence, Ridge.
Right,
Road.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a pathway for the Native American population, and they actually had trails on the ridge.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
And
it was a glacial thing.
Right.
You know, but yes, this is an incredibly diverse area for the environment and for...
So alive.
It is. I mean, and in changing. Like, when people, like, the idea of living dunes... Until they understand it, they're like, what, they live? And it's like, yeah,
yeah.
they move. I mean, eventually 12 is going to, they have to rethink that because Mount Baldy.
Right.
They've slowed it down, but it hasn't stopped.
No, it's still moving southward. So, yes. Well, I was in a program called Leadership Northwest Indiana, and we heard that I can't remember the superintendent at the time, and I always kind of thought that, well, if you got to the dunes, this was kind of like, okay, you weren't a really great superintendent. And he made a point, says, no, this is one of the few non-contiguous parks or lake shores that you have to manage, which makes it much more difficult. And he says, actually, it's kind of this mix of not just being out like Yellowstone or one of the huge parks, but it's a much more difficult thing to manage because of that. And then you have all these other little areas that you have to oversee.
Well, and the urban nature of it, too. Right. So many parks were just plucked out of green space. You know, and so they kept them the way they were, like Yellowstone. Yellowstone was never developed, you know, as an urban.
Right.
And the idea, though, that we have hit this stride where we're all able to appreciate each other and understand that, yes, industry has a place, but so does the environment and so does the park.
Yeah, having them live side by side. And there are times you kind of wish that you had a beautiful lake shore that went all the way from, the Illinois border. Because we don't have that much of Lake Michigan frontage when you think about, Wisconsin and even Illinois and everything. We have a very little bit of frontage, and how much of it we sort of gave away to industry. But that was, this part of Northwest Indiana was the last area to be developed, really. I mean, the rest of Indiana developed, and because north of the Kankakee River, it was just pretty marshy, we don't.
But you hit a good point on that it's not just the lakeshore.
No.
The national park includes Pinhook Bog, for example, which is much further inland. The Chelberg Farm. We got Maple Sugar Times coming
up. That's coming
March 2nd. Very excited about that.
Well, and did you know we have many more varieties of orchids in the national park than they do in Hawaii? People think of Hawaii as orchid capital, and it's just not. I mean, we have so much here.
Yeah.
Or have you had a chance to walk on a bog?
Right.
It is such a unique experience. And just to see the flora, it's truly amazing.
And, of course, Kyle's Bog, I learned, is a fen.
Yes, it's not a bog.
It's not a bog, it's a fen, but it's called Kyle's Bog because it's a fen.
And what you're walking on these bogs, it's millions of years old.
Sure.
It hasn't been touched. I mean, it's millions of years old.
So
there's like wild blueberries if you go in August. They're very delicious.
Yeah, and then there were the sandhill cranes that they come in,
cranes.
And then you have the, of course, is there many herons in the Herons Rookery anymore, or have they kind of shifted?
They've been doing okay, but I'm wondering, too, because there is one in Highland.
Yeah.
Rookery over there.
Yeah, and you can bike path right by it. I know I've done photography there, and you can see all of them and see the babies up there picking their heads up and everything. And, of course, I live in a lake that has herons on it, so I don't have to go someplace if they come to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we're just about ready to wrap up here. We thank our guests here.
Thank you so much.
This has been great.
Thank
the Idea Factory, but also the great book, Savings the Century of Progress. And if you've never seen where those homes are, you just go down 12. The way I do is you're coming from the West End. You go down, I think it's East State Park boundary down to Lakeshore Drive.
State Park Road, yep.
And you can see the wonderful homes there and see how they're developing and everything like that. Once more, we'd like to thank Walt Brenninger, our sponsor for this in this wonderful building. You can call them at 219-462-5821 if you're interested. Greg Kovach, our station manager, and of course, Bethel Razel Brower Museum. If you're interested in being listening on the air, we'd like to thank you. So, Art on the Air, heard every Friday at broadcast on Mondays at 5 p.m. Larry Breckner with Esther Golden. Thank you so much, and we'll be back next week with Bridget Covert and Micah Bernstein from the Southern Charter Association. Take care.
Aloha.